Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is the Hoops HD Report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by
I'm
David
David Griggs.
Griggs, Joby Fortson, and John
I'm David
Tytel.
Griggs.
Yes, they know
I'm
who you are,
very happy to be
unfortunately.
here. Yes.
Your name
And
is even on the screen, so we don't have to
well,
introduce
yeah,
you.
that's so everybody knows that I am David Griggs. There it is, like right there, in case you wondered.
This is the Hoops HD Report. We're going to be going over everything that's been going on among the major conferences and news and notes in the leagues and throughout the leagues and everything like that. And I guess before we even get to the teams and the games and the results, a little bit of news more news coming out about COVID. Unfortunately, we're hearing it every day. A couple shutdowns today. Even Shaka Smart, well, Texas is not shut down. Shaka did test positive; he's out. And the big thing though was at Michigan, where they've detected among the athletic department some of the new strain of COVID, as a result of which the entire athletic department shut down for 2 weeks, regardless of whether the individual teams actually had any positives within their things. And let me, I guess the question is, did maybe Michigan go too far here with this 2 week shutdown? I know the student athletes are kind of in protest over this. David?
You know, not to duck the question, but I almost don't even know how to answer it.
Okay.
I have a very hard time being critical of whether teams or schools went too far or not far enough, whether they decided to play or not play. I honestly just, it seems like I just don't know what the right answers are. I don't know if they did or not.
Well, Joby, maybe I know you have some thoughts on this also. What
Well,
do you?
I have been one of the aggressive, I think, generally, I've been supportive of teams that have wanted to play. I've been very critical of Warren on the football side. I have been supportive of where the ACC and SEC have been. Generally, I've been very aggressive on teams playing if the players feel safe and want to. This, I actually take a reverse position on. We don't know. Medicine doesn't know about the contagious nature of what we're facing with this particular strain. I have always said prudence, not inaction, which is what the Big Ten and Pac-10 did in football. I thought that was awful. I thought they sat in the corner and were inactive and did a poor job. It was poor leadership, flat out, by the former Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott, and Warren was misled down a path by some of his members, I would like to think.
Larry Scott's still commissioner till the end of the
Yeah,
athletic year,
well,
by the way.
he's gone.
Not quite
Bye-bye.
full. I'm putting in for
Don't
that
let the door,
position.
don't let the Pac-12 TV deal hit you on the way out. Which is the reason why he's gone.
I'm putting in for that position
But
on the grounds that I am not Larry Scott, and they are impressed.
it's true. You're more qualified than that in the jack wagon. But the but I'm very sympathetic to caution here. Prudence is what we should be. This is prudent. This is real. This is real, and we need to take caution. I am 100% behind what Michigan, especially if you're fighting the strain in your athletic department. Whoa.
Well, Shelby,
Chill
can
out. Let's take a break. And by the way, Michigan still rocks. They're not going to be affected. They're still a number one seed on my list, even if they take a break.
I
Sorry.
did want to point out something. When you talk about the decision to shut down athletics for 2 weeks, it may not have even come from athletics. It may not have even come necessarily from the president, although when you're talking about public schools, sometimes big decisions that get made like that are not made by an athletic director or an athletic department. They may have been told they were shutting down.
Might be from the governor's office. They
It
think
could
they're
be. And I don't know that it was or wasn't, but I am not going to jump down that department's throat for that decision because I don't even know. First of all, I don't know if it was right or wrong. And secondly, I don't even know if they are the ones that made it.
Well, and this is we've got to be. I mean, well, I've already said my piece that we need to be ridiculously careful right now in regards to what they stated. And Chad, you said was in the athletic department. It's not like, I don't care if it was an assistant coach on the women's soccer team. That's still in the same building-ish. I don't know Michigan structure. You know, I don't know.
The same complex of buildings. Yeah.
Complex of buildings. This thing flies around evidently by, I mean, it's a lot more contagious than the common cold on the new strain. So whoa, chill out. Let's evaluate. Prudence.
We also mentioned one other piece of news already that I wanted to get to, but Tytel, you are a Pac-12 guy, and I'm kind of, I know we didn't let you know I was going to be asking this, but Larry Scott being out of the Pac-12 commissioner, good news for the Pac-12?
I hope. I mean, somebody who's had to literally like go to one of a handful of bars in D.C. to watch the late night games on a TV about this big in a corner. It's certainly not fun to be a Pac-12 fan on the East Coast. That being said, like, they can compete among the best teams in the country, and they can recruit guys who get picked high in the NBA draft. So I don't know, as Joby says, like, if the only or primary factor for the new person is to get a good or better TV deal. But, like, I hope they get somebody better, but, like, I don't know that he ruined my life besides the fact that it's hard to watch games on the East Coast.
So I've always had access to the Pac-12 network where I am, so I've never had a problem with it. But yeah, I know a lot of people might have that problem.
For DirecTV subscribers.
Let's go ahead and go to actually, I'm not even going to go to any results quite yet. I want to start with something we haven't done in a few couple weeks now, and that's a little blind resume. I know we always like this, and I'm pulling up a pair of resumes here that. I'm sure if you look at them long enough, you could probably all figure out who they are, although I tried to make it a little more difficult by not showing you the nets of the upcoming opponents. But the question that I have here, I like to ask always with these blind resumes, and Tytel, let me start with you here on this, is left or right, which resume do you like better?
I thought we used to include the net rankings of the remaining schedule.
I know, I'm hiding that from you. I'm making it a little more difficult for you to predict who these teams are.
It's working. I mean, based on everything that you have there, let's see. If you like non-conference strength schedule, you got to go for the left. If you like net ranking, you got to go to the left. And if you like OAR, I'm going to the left. So I'm going left.
You're going left. Okay. Joe, do you agree with that? When you have two
rows, I like one the power wins on the right. I really do. I like the power wins on the right. The road wins in tier one, especially the high tier one of 31, love that. Neutral in tier three is not bad. You know, neutral, like, yeah, we get lost, but there's more wins on the left. But remember, 115 on the road, I get skeptical in tier two. You know, it's like, whatever. Yeah, you know, kind of, I actually like the right, plus the J&J's 36 versus 42, which I can look up so I can figure out the team. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, David, you want to take a guess at who these teams are?
I don't know. I do find it curious that they've both only played, if I'm reading this right. I'm not reading this right.
I know the teams now. That's funny.
Well, let me go ahead and pull this up here because I think it's going to surprise maybe even Joby when we look at who liked the team on the right better.
Because I don't
most
know.
People like the left better.
Tournament, the J&G tournament, yeah.
We've got a pair of Mountain West teams. I have San Diego State, who everybody in the world seems to like right now on the left there, and Colorado State, who is getting very little attention over there on the right.
I like the team on the left there because look at that nice home win against Colorado State on that resume. That is super.
And the road win against San Diego State for Colorado State?
Yeah, they played twice at San Diego State, and Colorado State got the split. And same thing with Colorado State. At Utah State, got the split. It's Tytel. What about the Rams? I know that is this team suddenly, with these two huge road wins in conference, right there in the picture?
They're getting more in the picture. You have to remember, like, this was a team that scored a whopping 33 points at St. Mary's a month ago. I was very worried about them. They bounced back in a big way, winning 9 of 11. They had road doubleheaders at San Diego State and at Utah State, split them both. Top 30 in the nation in shooting from both the free throw line and the three-point line. The only Power 5 teams who are top 30 in both, Notre Dame and a little team called Virginia. They really need sophomore point guard Isaiah Stevens to be more aggressive. When he attempts an actual free throw, the team's 11-1. When he doesn't, they're 0-2. As of now, I have them just outside the bubble.
And they've got absolutely huge coming up this week. Pair of home games with Boise State.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with the Mountain West tonight, obviously.
Interesting conference to start with, but good call, because four teams in the hunt for the NCAA tournament, and it looks like seven more that are going to be nowhere near the NIT.
Yeah, but Joby, what about this other team here? What about San Diego State, who
I actually really do like the way San Diego State has started to turn it around. Yeah, they played Air Force. Okay, Air Force, I saw both games, you know.
Why? And
it was, yeah, why?
You actually made it through both games.
Oh, my God. Well, the last one was that it started at 11 o'clock East Coast time. So, yeah, you can definitely say, why did you watch that? Oh, my God, Air Force is awful. They're awful.
It's disturbing.
But San Diego State, what I liked about it is San Diego State was the type of team that came in, you know, and they basically said, we're just going to out-athletic you. We're going to not let you play your Princeton offense. And we're going to take it right at you, which I think they can do. You say, and your point, David, is actually right on. There's four teams that are, you know, we're NIT or better. And six teams that are just – seven teams that are – six teams are to seven teams that just aren't very good. San Diego State will – I think I am very confident – will not just win, but dominate those other teams. Whereas I could see a Colorado State. I could see a Utah State. I don't know. Boise's look pretty darn good so far. But I could see them just absolutely – I could see them stub their toe. If San Diego State – and they did the second game was without Matt Mitchell, their leading scorer. So I'm or the first game. I think the San Diego State team is – a very solid, I think they are a tournament level team, despite UCLA's loss, which we'll talk about later. I think the win at UCLA is nice. And, you know, maybe we're talking about the names on the jerseys to a degree, but San Diego State is an at large caliber team and will be one at the end of the year.
Well, they're not going to, the problem that they have is not no more chances to get any big wins other than Boise State.
No. They have a chance. Yeah, exactly. But in conference and in that conference tournament, I think, yeah, they will have
it. But again, they've got an interesting home series against a Wyoming team that is not awful coming up this week. And the huge Boise State, Colorado State
game. By the way,
we are recording this around 9:30 PM here on Monday, January 25th. So the, first, those Utah State UNLV games is one of the games going on right now as we record this.
Yeah.
I will be very surprised if they don't whip Wyoming like a stepchild.
The top four teams there, I don't believe any of them have lost to anyone other than
they have not. They're undefeated against the rest. Those four teams are undefeated against the rest of the conference. You are correct.
Right. And it'll most likely end the season that way. So it's a four horse race for maybe two or three NCAA tournament spots, but maybe all four.
Maybe three, at least.
Yeah, I continue to be disappointed with San Diego State. I mean, I know they looked great against Air Force, who looked so bad that it's a little disturbing that they're in charge of defending the nation. But, I still think that this San Diego State team has a very, very high ceiling. And of all the – if they get to the tournament – I think that they are the ones that are capable of causing the most damage and in the best position to win a game in the round of 64. I'm kind of disappointed in them, even though that they're still well within reach of the bubble.
Since David went that way, of course, we'll go to the Patriot League next. Let's talk about the Army-Navy games that were played this week. Oh, wait, we're totally the wrong show. Let's jump over to the Big 12, actually. A pair of Big 12 games going on tonight, including a huge Texas Tech-West Virginia game. So we can't talk about that. But the big story out of the Big 12 was this week was the Sooners Titella. Maybe it was the Jayhawks, but Oklahoma goes and beats Kansas. Now Kansas lost three in a row for the first time since, I think, the Stone Age.
Yes, a bit of a home court hero here. The only road win all season by the Sooners was a four-pointer at TCU in early December. Then again, on the opposite side, who needs road wins when you can beat Kansas on your home court? A great win over the Jayhawks on Saturday. Out-rebounded them 36-26. They finish off this month, as we'll see when Shad flips the schedule, a brutal pair of games at Texas, then hosting Alabama in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. They have won a few close games this year, 77 free throw percent, top 25 in the nation. and sophomore Davion Harmon has been great during their three-game winning streak. 20 points a game, 10 of 21 behind the arc. He's had one turnover in 100 minutes. Great leadership. I have them as a 9 seed.
It's a 9 seed. All right. Joby, what were you do you agree on where we are with Oklahoma?
I had them on the bubble, if not like kind of a first four-ish type team. Then they beat Kansas. And it's what John was saying. It's you know Herman's been good, but I actually like I'll shift to Austin Reeves. He in the first half couldn't hit the broad side of a barn, and Oklahoma's still in it, and he's their leading scorer. In the second half, he still couldn't hit really the broad side of a barn, but he scored 16, 10 from the free throw line. That is because he drove the lane. He created, he didn't have a shot. So he did his best to create on his own. And that is the type of play that impresses the hell out of me and creates wins over teams like Kansas. And we're going to be dumping some junk on Kansas for being only 4-4, but this is still a top 20, if not top 10 type team. So great win by the Sooners. Good for them. They really showed it. And I agree, Tytel. 9 seed sounds pretty good to me.
By the way, the AP and coaches poll numbers you see on the screen here, they are not correct. So please ignore them tonight. Oklahoma actually is in the AP top 25 poll. So
they broke it. I haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, they did break in at 24. They did not make the coaches poll. Okay. They were 26th overall. So please ignore those numbers for tonight's purposes. Oklahoma did break the top 25, given the Big 12, most of the damn conference in the top 25. David, as far as the rest of the conference goes, I mean, Texas, we've talked about the fact that Shaka is shut down, but I think that the other big story we got to talk about for what's coming up in this conference is SEC Big 12 Challenge Week here. We have 10 games on the schedule for Saturday, allegedly. Given the fact that they were set before the season, are any of these even worth watching at this point?
Well, you know, Texas and Tennessee would be if only they would wait to set the matchups. Texas and Kentucky are opposite ends. Alabama at Oklahoma. It's
very interesting, actually,
two ranked teams there going on the road to a team that is not much of a road warrior, but that's really, really tough to beat at home. Alabama has passed some big tests already. LSU is slipping further and further and further down my seed list. If they can knock off Texas Tech at home, I think it would at least bring some stability to it. Kansas and Tennessee, definitely worth watching because it's not often you get to see Kansas lose 4 in a row.
They got to play. They get a home game against TCU on Thursday before that.
Might
not. But if that game's a go, again, as far as all these games, I think the Arkansas Oklahoma State game is kind of interesting also on Saturday, and the Florida West Virginia game. Two more games are interesting.
Florida West Virginia.
I'll be shocked if Oklahoma State does not boat race Arkansas. That Arkansas is just such a paper tiger.
They have a big record, but no, not the wins. I'll tell you what. Why don't we, while we're talking about the SEC, though, and why don't we just go ahead and look at the other half of that, and here is the SEC, and Tytel, I think the story in the SEC this weekend was what Missouri did at Tennessee.
They kind of get shifted to the back burner because Alabama's on this amazing run, but I think we do have to give Mizzou a little love. They had a 20-point home loss to Tennessee last month, avenged it in Knoxville last Saturday, and they're now 10-2. Three winnable games coming up to Auburn, TCU, Kentucky. Then they host Alabama a week from Saturday in what could be like the SEC title-deciding game. They can't make a three to save their life, only 29% behind the arc, but they're top 50 in the nation on defense, both field goal percentage allowed from one-point land and two-point land and three-point land. And you have to remember, Coach Quanzo Martin, he comes in losing records each of the past 2 years. He's now looking like Coach of the Year material. I have them as a 4 seed.
I agree with you. They look like the top 16 seed. Sorry, David, go ahead.
Well, yeah, another question for Tytel, and maybe like Quanzo Martin, throughout his whole career, even back to the Missouri State days, just doesn't ever seem to get the national appreciation that he deserved. And I don't know why. He won at Missouri State. He actually won at Tennessee. They couldn't wait to get rid of him. He was winning at Cal. And now, as Tytel says, he's got Missouri going better than they ever had since probably, Mike Anderson left. Why isn't this guy appreciated?
My guess is that he's never, I don't think he's ever made like a Final Four or a very deep tourney run, which is where you really make your name in the business. But I mean, the JNG loves him, Joby, and a seven for Missouri.
Yeah. And you get those big wins like we had this past weekend, on the road against Tennessee. That's going to, the JNG is going to love you. And because it loves Tennessee even after the loss. It still loves Tennessee probably more than the average computer ranking or person does. So yeah, Missouri's a real deal. I mean, we talked about them, you know, we talked about them before as the real deal like a month ago. Then we kind of forgot about them. But look at those tier one wins: Oregon, Illinois. I mean, these are, you know, the at Arkansas that you mentioned. I don't, you know, I mean, this is a great resume. Oh my goodness, it's a great resume. Get all bow down to Quanzo. He is the coach of the year in the SEC, no doubt, maybe national coach of the year.
Yeah, and this is what is so infuriating is that when they set the Big 12 SEC matchups, mm-hmm. that they did not match Kansas and Missouri because it's the border war and it's what we always need. And that should have been the matchup.
And David, I will go back to your Tennessee, Texas. The Rick Barnes special would have been awesome.
Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
Done that from word go.
Hey, let's just make a quick flip right here. I've got LSU's playing Texas Tech. Missouri's playing TCU. Flip them. Let's get Missouri Texas Tech. I'll take that over any of the other matchups that are already.
What about Missouri Kansas?
David, real quick, LSU, a team that you know we kind of thought was in the middle, was maybe decent, maybe not. It's kind of funny, but you go and you get blown out of Kentucky and suddenly you're a garbage team, aren't you? I mean, I've
not. Well, yeah, I mean, they have beaten no one other than maybe Arkansas that's even remotely within reach of the bubble. And, you know, when you look at their Georgia, South, these are not good road teams. There's just nothing there. And it isn't for a lack of chances. I was kind of impressed early on with that loss at St. Louis because that was when we thought St. Louis was really good. And they
might be. They haven't played in 3 months, but
yeah. But you know, if they're going to pick it up, they need to string together some wins, and they almost need that home win against Texas Tech just to get something.
They got their chances here after game at A&M. Texas Tech at Alabama, home against Florida, home against Tennessee coming up there too.
But they've already lost to Alabama by 30 points in the dome.
I don't think they're going to win the game. I just say they have a chance. Joby, real quick, the Crimson Tide, as you mentioned, crushed LSU. It's looking so darn good right now. Right. Again, they're not rated 18th and 16th. They
jumped all the way to 8th in the coaches and 9th in the AP. Oh, my goodness. I mean, just amazing. And Nate Oates has done this is remarkable. I mean, yeah. Hey, Coach K, he's allowed to talk crap to you officially now. Petty has been outstanding for them. Yeah, you could argue Herb Jones is an All-American with everything he does. This is amazing. And here's the stat that just throws my mind. It's like, this is the type of team that you run across in the tournament. Yeah, this team could fall flat on its face because of what I'm about to say, but it also could be the type of team that all of a sudden in a 1-4 Gonzaga game, Gonzaga loses. And the reason why is because 91% of Alabama's makes, 91 are either layups or three-pointers. 91. That means only 9% of their shots are from mid-range. They go inside, outside, and you have to be able to handle. And now the loss of Bruner is going to hurt because that loses their 5 spot nailing threes. So that was a unique thing. And they still beat LSU by 30 without him. So it's not like they're definitively hurting. But this team has a lot of pieces. And, hey, we have a Javon Quinterly sighting out of Villanova, Virginia, and Arizona. Hey, he landed in Alabama. You might do even better than all those teams. Who knows?
Other than the SEC Big 12 games, we would have thought Kentucky at Alabama tomorrow night with Alabama. What Alabama's been doing was a big game. It might not be. It might be another blowout with this way Kentucky's playing again. But let's jump over to the Big Ten, a conference in which if we wanted to, our show will be a lot quicker if we talk about the bad teams, because we'll be done in about 3 seconds here. Yeah. Everybody else looking so darn good. Starting off with Tytel, with the Hoosiers, lost to Rutgers, but a little, but did something pretty nice before that.
Well, finally, Rutgers gives a win, and sadly, I talk about the losing team. Sorry, Chad. No, I mean, we have a lot of decent teams we talk about every year who are, like, mediocre. They beat the teams they should below them. They lose to the ones above them who they shouldn't beat. And then you got the Hoosiers. This team wins by 12 at Iowa Thursday, then has the total letdown game with the home loss to Rutgers on Sunday. The game at Michigan scheduled this Saturday. I assume it's off.
Off.
It doesn't get any easier. Pair of home games next week against Illinois and a now very angry Iowa team. The good news for them, Trace Jackson-Davis leading the nation, 142 free throws attempted. The bad news, he's only making 68% of them. Five of his team's seven losses by single digits. He just needs to hit a few more a game and they're going to be solidly in. Right now, I have them as a 10 seed.
Yeah, David, how about the team I put up on the right there? This is the big question mark team suddenly, and it's Michigan State. You know, this is probably your 11th team in the Big 12, Big 10 right now, and they're definitely right there in the bubble.
Yeah, and there's a lot to be concerned about here. You know, the blowout loss at Minnesota, not being able to beat Purdue at home, who I know Purdue's playing pretty well, and then a loss at Northwestern, which at the time seemed like, well, Northwestern is just this – You know, rocket ship rise of a team. They've come crashing down to earth. Rutgers at home, the only team that they've beaten that's inside the field. And Rutgers not the best road team. They struggled against that NIT-ish Duke team. And that's really all that they've done.
Now they are finally back on the court. They're supposed to be playing at Rutgers. That game, is for everything I'm hearing, is a go for this week.
Okay, and again, is Michigan State potentially good? I think they are. There's just too much there, and their ceiling is just too high to think that it's impossible. And the meat of their schedule lies ahead. If they start stringing together wins, they could still end up as a protected seed. Their paper isn't there now, but well, look at their schedule. I mean, you know, if they go out and win their next two, everybody's going to be like, well, holy crap. Yeah. This
if they start winning that stretch of, you know, at Michigan, Iowa, at Purdue, at Indiana, and then that's what you get.
That was what everyone was expecting them to do.
So. Yeah, and they'd be catching Michigan in their first game after this pause.
Yeah,
right. But Joby, I think the other team with a huge win was Ohio State going and winning at Wisconsin on Saturday.
Wow! Chris Holtzman, good coach. Can we say it? Yeah. I know. I did not see such a dominant performance in Wisconsin. I mean, you know, that's up there in, like, you know, we talk about Villanova going to Texas, you know, of national wins of importance. That's up there. And no one's real. I don't think people realize that Ohio State has established themselves now as a legitimate. They were constantly being talked about in the 5-7 range. That win propels them to protected seed status. And then they can build on this. We'll see. But, yeah, because the Big Ten's so tough. Poor Ohio State. They need to beat Michigan State at home to do this. But, if they went to Iowa and Maryland and lost, would we go, oh, Ohio State stinks? No. Yeah, that's how strong the Big Ten. So,
there's no game other than the Penn State home game. There's no games on that schedule. Let's say it's like, oh, that'd be an awful loss.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously it's a tournament team, you know, just win some of those games and you're fine. But they're more than that. This is a team that has the ability to go forward show a lot of strength. And then, you know, go to the NCAA tournament, do what Big Ten teams who are ranked like the 4 seed do and lose in the second round.
David, I know you and I have had a disagreement about the team I put up there on the right. Minnesota Golden Gophers. You look at that top of that resume, and I understand that they're all at home, but you beat Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State, and even St. Louis. And I get they haven't won a road game, but also you got to look at the fact that the four road games they played were at Michigan, number 3 in the net, at Iowa, number 5 in the net, at Illinois, number 7 in the net. And their toughest, the easiest road game they played was at Wisconsin, number 18 in the net. I it's hard to fault them for not having a road win when that's who your four road teams are. Ty, let me ask you this. Do you agree with me that Minnesota, that David is crazy for ignoring Minnesota because they don't have a road win?
Ignoring
that schedule?
The schedule is ridiculous. Is he ignoring them as like any seed or a protected seed or what?
As being worthy of being in the conversation for a protected seed.
I think they're in the conversation. I mean, what else does he want them to do? Like they
not lose by 25, 15, 27, and 12.
Okay, so but 75, 57 over Michigan, who's probably a one seed.
Well, yeah, that was at home.
So it doesn't count if it's at home. I get it.
But they only went by 7 over a 2-seed Iowa. So, you know.
Oh, hey. Yeah, there we go. It was only 3 over Loyola Marymount that first 17. Time.
And it was again. Only 14 to Maryland at home. Yeah.
I will say
that. Okay, it is. I mean, that is – everybody is better at home than on the road. I mean, there's no surprise there. But the contrast here is ridiculous. It isn't the losses per se because, like you said, those four teams combined will probably lose 3 or fewer games total at home among the four of them. But the margins of victory and the way that they looked, it's just like – it's almost hard to believe that it's the same lineup when they're on the road as it is when they're at home. I mean, they are so drastically Jekyll and Hyde night and day.
Well, David, sorry that the Nebraska game was canceled due to COVID because their resume would look 100% different if they got to play Nebraska and then drill them like everybody
if
else.
If they drilled them, yeah. I mean,
10 miles joke coming.
Well, yeah, but I gotta
say Minnesota did look like they were playing on the road this weekend when they got blown out at home by Maryland, which did not look good. So that was I would like that. I would take that argument over the lack of a road win and how bad they looked against Maryland. But here's the upcoming schedule.
The lack of a single digit loss. How about that?
Here's the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten. The Michigan games, you can go ahead and cross those off. Those are gone already. But hopefully we'll get most of the remaining games in the schedule in here this week, including that Michigan State Rutgers game, a big one to circle there. Let's keep things moving, though. Let's jump over to the ACC. And let's start at the top of the ACC, which means, Tytel, I'm going to start with you and talk about Florida State. Oh. Joey's gonna nod like that.
I don't know that they're in Virginia's class, but they're certainly a little below, if at all. 9-2, pair of double digit wins at Louisville and home to Clemson last week. They host Miami Tuesday and then a sneaky tough game at everyone's favorite Georgia Tech on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They've been great from behind the arc. 39% is top 20 in the nation. Very fortunate they've only played one close game. The reason it's fortunate, their opponents are shooting 77% from the line. Very balanced scoring. 5 guys each scoring from 9 to 15 a game. And Coach Leonard Hamilton, he always gets mentioned as a good coach. Nobody really thinks of him, I think, as a like Hall of Fame level coach. He's 10 wins away from 600 for his career. I think he's going to get it, and I think he's going to be a 5 seed.
Yeah, they are 16 in the AP poll this week.
I think they're better than a 5.
Joby, number 8 in the AP poll, though, is your Virginia team, and that's.
I don't know if we're a 2 seed. What that would indicate, but I do think UVA is. Well, UVA, as we just got off. Wow, a little cathartic victory on this. And if you watch the Syracuse game and you know the history of UVA basketball, you know why I'm going there. So UVA is up 13 with 8 minutes to go. And Syracuse puts on a press. And first 2 possessions by UVA, turnover, layup. And every UVA fan is like going, ew. 2000.
Well, they've won a national championship.
Oh, yeah. They only cost the Final Four. But then UVA did exactly what you're supposed to do. You broke the press. But UVA, what people forget about that 2014 game where they blew that double-digit lead to the Syracuse when they had a Final Four bid all wrapped up, was UVA, and I've said this on the show a number of times, had broke the press actually easy. But they had 2-on-1 layups every time. They missed the 2-on-1 layups. And what that did was it sped up the game and the number of possessions, which is out of UVA. Instead, UVA backed out. And, oh, Murphy nails a three. Sam Hauser nails a three. And by the way, if you saw Sam Hauser play tonight, all of Matt's, oh, he's not a big time player. Yeah, you can throw that in the trash. Sam Hauser was just kind of good tonight. And Jay Huff was just unstoppable, career high in both rebounds and points tonight. The unicorn, as many people will call. The defense and Billis and Schulman did the game. And I thought Billis, for once, actually was very accurate in saying that this defense is 100% different than what we saw early in the year against San Francisco and Gonzaga. Not saying they're better than Gonzaga. They beat Gonzaga on a rematch, but this is a different team. This is the best team in the ACC, in my opinion, even though Florida State, strong argument for that case, without a doubt. But what it's done is two protected level playing seeds in the ACC right now with Florida State and Virginia.
Yeah, David, I'm pulling up a pair of other ACC teams I want to quickly discuss, and they're both teams that are not in that greatest shape. Pitt, first of all, coming up there with a very, very bad loss to Wake Forest this week. North Carolina got two wins, but two wins that didn't really help you. Beating NC State and Wake Forest.
Yeah, I think I've had North Carolina outside the bubble for several weeks now. I've had Pitt right on it. I think I've recently put them in. Wake, is losing at Wake in and of itself a terrible loss? No, it's not a good loss. It certainly does set you back, but it isn't so crippling that it can't be overcome. But it's still, when you look at everything else they've done and you look at everything else that's on their profile, it's the kind of game that tournament caliber teams need to be able to win most of the time.
Especially when you have no wins against anybody that's actually going to be in the field, right?
Exactly.
But they lost to St. Francis, so they have that.
I mean, by comparison, when you look at it like that, I mean, the Wake Forest loss isn't so bad when you have the St. Francis loss on there, too. It makes it not look so bad, which I think raises the level of their profile
here. Oh, okay. I think it's time to move on. But North Carolina, but those two teams actually have a big game, assuming it's a go, against each other. And we'll do our bracket rundown show Thursday. The winner of tomorrow night's game might be in, the loser might be out, put it that way.
Correct, yeah.
Great.
We've also got the rest of the upcoming schedule on there. The big Virginia Tech game coming up this weekend.
Trap being laid in Atlanta right now, because this Georgia Tech team is, gosh, and Zach is just going to be smiling watching this podcast.
He'll be insufferable.
This Georgia Tech team, I think Usher played out of his head against Virginia to keep it close. I think Virginia is a significant better team than Georgia Tech. But it's not that Virginia played bad. Virginia at home only won by two, but it was not because Virginia had an off game. You could argue K.A. Clark did, but Georgia Tech played out of their mind, and part of that out of their mind was a legitimate. Alvarado is the real deal. He is all ACC point guard. I have not seen a point guard better than him in the ACC, period. He is awesome. The guy is tenacious defensively. He can nail threes. He can set up players. And Moses Wright was a zero star. Zero star. No one recruited him because he didn't play basketball until he was a tennis player until he grew like 3 to 4 inches. And his mom said, "Why don't you try basketball? You're tall now." And the guy is a rim protector who actually has a shot and nailed a couple of threes against Virginia. This is a real player who's going to develop into a great all-ACC player eventually. They have talent. It's not just Pastner putting the pieces together and with duct tape. They have some talent. And DeVoe didn't even show up against Virginia. Virginia shut him down. I've named four players now that are legitimate ACC solid starters and would start for a majority of teams in the conference.
Yeah, but they also have Josh Pastner as head coach. So let's keep things rolling right here. We got a bunch more conferences to get to, so we'll start running a little long here. But let's jump over to the Big East. And Titel, Villanova finally got back on the court, and for a team that hadn't played in 3 million years, they got a pair of wins.
you're going to take a 4 week long winter break, you better bounce back big time. They had a very tough home win over Seton Hall, should have lost it arguably. Easy home win over Providence. Road trips this week to UConn and then a rematch with the Hall, which should be very interesting. Offense looks great. Top 60 in the nation in shooting from 1 point land and 2 point land and 3 point land. And it's the veteran leadership of the senior point guard, Colin Gillespie. The past three wins, 20 points a game, 11 of 22 behind the arc, made all 12 of his free throws, only three turnovers in the three wins. I have them as a one seed.
Yeah, I think you and the rest of the nation probably have as a one seed right now, especially the way they look, you know, getting these two wins. You get that win after being out so long. David, UConn, I know Book Knight has been out, but they are absolutely heading in the wrong direction at the moment.
Yeah, a bit of a tailspin here. And it's in a conference like this, it's so easy to string together losses. And I think that's kind of what's happening to them. Again, I still think that they're relatively healthy as far as making the tournament. But as far as landing in the top half of the bracket or even challenging for a protected seed, they're going to have to string together a few more wins. I don't know what they have coming up, but it almost doesn't matter. Because there's 11 teams in this conference and seven are really, really tough to beat.
Yeah, their schedule, at least we see, is Butler at home and Villanova.
Oh, that's
at
it.
Home
that one's
this week.
That's winnable. Yeah.
But then Villanova at home, so forget that.
But
Joby, the team schizophrenia in this conference, and maybe nationally. And if you are Marquette and have all these great wins at the top of the profile, the one thing you cannot do is what they did.
Exactly what they're doing. I mean,
lose at home.
Oh my God. What are you doing?
Oh,
Dave Leto rises up. And by the way, not a fluky loss. DePaul was better that day. I watched that game. DePaul was better. Marquette did not look like a tournament team. I love the top of the resume. How could you not? Creighton, Wisconsin, two protected seeds, you know, et cetera. Providence is in the discussion. You know. But come on, man. You know, DePaul, it's what I said they were in good position precisely because they had games against, they had a numerous games against DePaul, St. John's,
Butler,
who I think is very down. They had the chance to pile up. Their biggest weakness is that 8-7 record. Though the DePaul loss adds to that weakness, but 8-7 record. To make that better, to make yourself a tournament team, all you have to do is beat the crud. They couldn't beat the crud. And if that continues, they're missing the tournament. But on the other hand, they sweep Butler. They beat St. John's in the rematch. They beat DePaul in the rematch. And then win one or two games like in Connecticut. I think if they get four games above 500 – they're going to be okay. But
Chad,
you lose to St. DePaul. I don't know if you can do it.
Can you pull up their profile again, Chad?
Sure.
Okay. And because I just want to see like what I think is going to happen. There it is on the right. I think they go to Providence and win. I think they come home to Butler and lose. Creighton at home's a toss-up. Seton Hall is a toss-up. Loss at Butler. Definitely lose at home to St. John's. Okay. Then they go to UConn and win. Probably lose at DePaul, and then they beat Xavier.
Yeah, it's not going to be a tournament resume. There's too many losses to lose games like that, I think, at this point. Let's jump over to the Pac-12. And Tytel, coming up here in about an hour from now as we're recording, is going to be game two of the Arizona State-Arizona series that started out with, I think you were pretty happy with a pretty darn good, exciting win on Thursday night.
I would go with exciting over darn good.
Okay.
Obviously, I was very concerned when they got swept at home by both LA schools. Bounced back in a huge way. 32-point win at the Beavers 2 weeks ago. 2-point win at ASU thanks to the tip-in at the buzzer by the Lithuanian sensation, Ažulis Kubelis. For those of you on the East Coast with insomnia, you get the Territorial Cup rematch, as Chad said, 11 o'clock Eastern tonight. They've been great from behind the arc, 38%, top 40 in the nation. And Sean Miller just made the decision a couple of weeks ago to put freshman Benedict Mathurin into the starting lineup. And the Canadian sensation has responded in a big way. 22 points a game, 8 of 14 behind the arc, only two turnovers in 66 minutes.
A couple other big stories in this conference. David, what a week for the Beavers. Oregon State with the wins over USC and then winning at Oregon in the rivalry game. And where did this team come from?
Civil War. I don't care if they don't want to call it that. It's the Civil War.
Well, yeah, it is the Civil War. But Oregon State, who had shown no evidence at all of being able to finish above the middle of the Big Sky conference, coming out and beating two clearly – you know, solid tournament teams that are probably going to be wearing white in a round of 64. I don't know where it came from. It's probably the most improbable thing that's happened all year, really. I mean, the fact that they went out and won both of them. And is this team, do they have something? Did they get a player? I mean, where did this slingshot come from?
Well, they're still a long way from the bubble, but a team that is not a long way from the bubble, Joby, is Stanford. Very nice win over UCLA for that was kind of down below the line. Maybe they're up right around or even over the line with that Alabama win there in their pocket.
We talk a lot about Oscar Da Silva, you know, he came home when it mattered, didn't he? Tremendous job by Stanford. Stanford played they went to North Carolina and played a tough schedule out of conference. Give them credit. You know, they got the Alabama win. They lose. North Carolina is a bubble team as well, and I think will be in the field more and more as the season goes on. Stanford has, you know, heft to their resume. And I think that UCLA win really secured their spot for now. I mean, they could stumble along, the Arizona schools and the Washington schools.
Three straight road games coming up.
Right. So. But the Stanford as a whole, I think, has said, you know what? We don't want to be in the first four, because I have had them in the first four for basically a month and a half. Yeah. And now they've basically said, no. We're gonna be an 8-9. We're gonna be that.
I don't think they rose that high. I think that might be a little bit.
I think they are. I think they are knocking on the door. I'd say 8-9 is precisely where they are, because I'm not a believer in the team that lost to the previously winless Washington Huskies. That's the team that is overrated in this conference, not Stanford.
You talk about Colorado being overrated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Let's pull up this Colorado profile because I kind of like this Colorado team.
Oh, I do too.
I thought, David, you were on this with me, but I'll take a second here for the profile to load. I was not expecting us to go this way.
You get boat raced by the Huskies.
You got boat raced by the Huskies, but the Huskies won't beat Utah as well. They've actually started. The Huskies are starting to figure something out here, but win at USC, the home win over Oregon, the home win over Stanford. They played once, Joby. Who won head to head?
Well,
the rest of the losses are very good losses.
Yeah.
Playing Palo Alto, baby. Come on.
All right. Let's take a quick look at the upcoming schedule here in the Pac-12 before we jump over to our last couple of conferences. Coming up this week, as we mentioned, tonight is the Territorial Cup game. We got allegedly, again, Oregon, UCLA, Oregon State, Oregon and Oregon State at UCLA and USC this week. Those might be the games to circle. Stanford, Arizona, you got to circle that one as well. There's actually some pretty good games of the Pac-12 on the schedule there coming up here.
Right, and so, you know, especially with teams like Stanford hovering around the bubble and Oregon State making a mad, mad dash for it.
And David, you'll be watching Washington State, Washington on Sunday. Nobody else will.
Absolutely. Wazoo. Oh, I am watching that one. I've got everything. All my reminders set.
For the Apple Cup there. Let's jump over to the number one team in the nation here real quick here. Gonzaga running away with this, just, you know, rolled this week over Pacific. I think that was the only game the last 7 days. But beyond the Zags, Titel, BYU, fairly impressive in their two wins this week also.
You can see, like, with all the numbers, there's a big separation between BYU and everybody below them. I would argue there's also a big separation between them and Gonzaga, so I'm not
beat them.
But I think there's a legit shot that this team could win the next 10 in a row and be 23-3 when the Zags come to Provo for the regular season finale on February 27th. Alex Barcelo is amazing, still shooting over 50% from behind the arc this year, despite the fact that he went 0-for-5 on Saturday. And Matt Harms, shout out for the perfect game he had against Portland. Made 1 of 1 from 3-point range, 8 of 8 from 2-point range, and 4 of 4 from 1-point range. Unbelievable game. I have them as an 8 seed.
Yeah, yeah, that's about the range I think.
Harms was awful against Pepperdine.
And you got to look at the rest of the conference too, because like once you get below Gonzaga, say you take the other nine teams and you formed an all-star team and you put that team on the floor against Gonzaga, I think they could hold it within 20. I mean, so the rest of the league, not so bad.
Yeah, yeah. Gonzaga's at San Diego and at Pepperdine this week, according to the schedule, at least. BYU at Pepperdine and hosting San Francisco. Yeah, Dave, nobody else really worth discussing.
The ACC, you might pray that you're within 20.
Joby, over in the American, a team definitely worth discussing is Houston, who's up there. I think it says 8 on the screen. I think they're top 25 rankings. So I think they went up a little bit higher than that. I've got them up at 6 now in both polls this week. In fact, got the revenge over Tulsa very easily. Nice. And won at Temple.
Yeah. This team, I'm still shocked they lost to Tulsa. I think that shock might be the only team, only game they lose until the NCAA tournament. And they're so good. Who knows what happens in the NCAA tournament? They're going to be at least a 2 seed. They'll need help to get to the one line. They're going to need Michigan and Villanova, et cetera, to stumble, or Baylor to magically lose a bunch of
I think those teams will – I think if they win out, they're going to be a 1 seed. I'll put it that way. They'll be enough to get there.
Well, like I said, they need help. Villanova and Michigan are slotted ahead of them. They need help.
They'll lose.
Help might come, but let's wait on it. They're still the top half of the 2 seed line right now, and that's pretty darn good. Their defense, their rebounding. I love good defensive teams, and this team delivers on it. You can't grab a rebound against these guys. They will clean the glass like you would. I mean, I sound like Dick Vitale, but they are Windex, baby. Yeah, these guys, Kelvin Sampson, for all of the picadillos he's had in his past career, the fact is the guy at Oklahoma and Indiana before and now at Houston, he's a hell of a coach.
He is.
They lose Mims. They don't miss a beat. This team is golden. They are – and they play hard. They just play – they beat you up. They grind you. Oh, I – from a basketball, like, purist
– stop salivating, Joby.
I love it.
We get it. We love this team. But, Tytel, if there is a second bid in this conference with what Tulsa and Wichita State did this week, how about SMU come back into play here?
I think so. You see the two losses. They started the month with a very good home loss to a great Houston team. And then you'd think a single-digit loss to Cincinnati would not be a bad loss. This year, it's a bad loss, unfortunately, and hard to explain. But they bounced back, double-digit wins over Temple and at UCF. Very busy week ahead. A home-and-home game series with Memphis. Then they head to Houston for the revenge game on Sunday. The X factor for this team is senior Tyson Jolly, a transfer from Baylor. Led the team in scoring last year, over 14 a game. He missed each of the first 9 games this year. He tweeted out, "It's over for me," unquote, in November. People thought he was done with basketball. Comes back Saturday, 2 blocks off the bench. If he can take them up a notch, I have them outside the bubble right now. I think they're a strong contender to make the bubble.
Yeah, it's going to be – well, Tytel, let's assume they lose this Houston game, but they win the rest of them, or maybe only one other slip up the rest of the way. Do you think that's enough to get you in? You're not going to beat anybody in the field, but you'll have a lot of wins.
It's a great question. I think this year it won't be just because I think like the 11th best team in the Big Ten will have enough in tier one that this team won't, but it would be very interesting if they're like 22-3 and lose to Houston in the conference tournament title game, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very interesting question about SMU if they can really – they got to roll through the rest of these teams.
I don't think they will do that, Chad, but I think they will because those Big Ten teams with those big resumes might be sitting on a 13-13 overall record, and that knocks that Maryland slash Indiana slash, sorry, Chad, Rutgers type team that they will get knocked for that.
Dave, you had a comment on the conference here as I put it.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I am officially no longer big on UCF.
Okay. Yeah, down at 1-5.
I'm big on Wichita State.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wichita State, bad loss bad loss this week also, but, Tulsa as well, faltering. But let's jump over to our final conference of the day, the Atlantic 10, where. We thought we'd be talking about St. Louis finally getting some games in, but they still haven't been able to. However, the Bonnies did look pretty good, Joby, and they got a pair of wins, and they're justifying the fact that we've liked this team, aren't they?
UCU is a bubble team. They really are. And I don't think they're in the field at this moment, but VCU is a bubble team, and the Bonnies didn't just beat them, they whipped them. Jaron Holmes, real deal. Love that guy. Interesting thing is Kyle Lofton. This is the weakness there. The Kyle Lofton's the point guard. He is, you know, over five assists. He's the leading scorer, but he's only shooting 10% from three. If I'm playing the Bonnies, I'm sorry. I let Kyle Lofton shoot. You know, that's just my strategy. But the fact is, he's still driving the lane. He's tough. He's drawing free. He's drawing fouls and dishing off this. And in addition to Holmes, who can nail those threes, I think this team is without a doubt right now playing at a tournament level. The J&J has them way too high because of the one loss thing. They'll, as soon as they lose, they'll fall to where they should be. But should be is not first four. Should be is mid-range seeding right now, in my opinion, 8-9.
Their net would put them as about a 10 or 11 seed, and that's
I think that's right. I think they're higher than where the net is, but I don't think they're much higher. They're closer to the net than the J&J, I will admit.
Tytel, there are only 347 teams, I believe, playing this year. 349th in tempo, so slower than two teams are not playing is Davidson.
It's like Tony Bennett decided to coach a mid-major this year. That's ridiculous. But obviously, like, getting it done. I was watching them against at UMass this weekend on Sunday. They were down by 12 after 12 minutes. I thought, well, great. Why did I pick this team to talk about? Going a 57-30 run to win by 9 and extend their winning streak to 4 games. They have the whole week off, and then they host the 8-10 game of the year on Saturday when the Bonnies come to town. Great interior shooting. 58% inside the arc is top 15 in the nation. And one of the very few teams in the nation, not just who played 15 games, but they've started the same 5 guys for all 15 games. I think that's going to pay big dividends in the months ahead. I have them outside the bubble right now, but they're looking very good.
Well, that might be big games, but David, the other big games coming up this week, St. Louis allegedly finally back on the court.
Well, this is the thing.
Especially at Richmond on Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, but St. Louis needs to play. And, like, I don't know. They've missed so much. I mean, there's most of the conference has played between 6 and 8 games. They've played 0. It's almost inexplicable, really. And so, again, big game for them. Dayton kind of been disappointing. Well, not kind of, just flat out have been disappointed in them this year. I know that they lost the player of the year, but I still thought that they would at least be a tournament team. They are not. I think SLU rolls in that game. But this is, as you know, a monster rivalry. It's probably the biggest rivalry, not just in college basketball, but in sports around the world. The Arch Barron Cup. If you haven't been to the Arch Barron Cup website, you need to go there and read about how Poison C.C. DeVille had never been more scared for his life.
What's the name of the trophy again?
The Arch Barron Cup.
They have a trophy for player of the year.
Does have its thorn, David?
What is the name of the trophy? I forget.
It's something crazy, but it's a great. Yeah.
It is the most wonderful farcical website.
We need Sleeka here to fill out details of the Arch Barron Cup. Yeah.
In fact, stop watching the show and go to that website and read it because it is a scream.
But the St. Louis Richmond game, assuming it's going on Friday, that Richmond's a tough little team there. Probably outside the bubble at this point, but you know, we're still a shot to make a run potentially if they really get hot again. Their Kentucky win not looking very good anymore, but I think I've done
hold
enough
on to my Kentucky win.
Keep holding on. You hold on till next year, maybe, Joby. I'm sorry, 9 losses already. At this point, though, let's go ahead. That completes our review of the games. Let's go ahead and pull this down here, and I want to run through each of you for any other final thoughts on the night. And Joby, let me start with you.
Yeah, well, considering we just ended with the A-10, it's very apropos. The A-10, we talked on our – we started with the Mountain West, we ended with the A-10. the Mountain West, we mentioned during that time, the Colorado State, San Diego State, Utah State, and Boise have not lost outside their four. That has been very beneficial, especially when you connect San Diego State's win over UCLA as part of the whole, you know, round, as well as Boise and BYU. So all of a sudden that builds on each other and elevates all four to potential in the conversation for a bit. The A-10 had a similar situation developing, but St. Louis hasn't played. That's been a killer for them because they don't involve that win into helping the other big ones, but the biggest hit for it, and this is what cannot happen in the Mountain West and already has happened in the A-10, and it's cost the A-10 a bid already, LaSalle beating Richmond. Kills Richmond as a good win. If Richmond was still, they're bubble. Richmond's not on the bubble. They're well off the bubble because they lose to LaSalle. Look at the Mountain West. The Mountain West needs to maintain themselves. They need to say, hey, Boise, you can't lose to Wyoming, you know, et cetera. If the Mountain West maintains that, they will maintain 2-3 bids. Otherwise, they wind up like the A-10, which is looking at 1 or 2. And that is a big deal. My final thought, though, as a postscript is, guys, you know how much I am not a K fan, but come on. We have gotten so weak. He didn't berate the student newspaper guy. Come on.
I saw that interview also. I don't think it was that awful. And he apologized today also, by the way.
On Twitter, it's endemic of everybody wants to just pile on people on Twitter. Get over yourselves, people. It's not that bad. And this is coming from me. Please tell me you've watched these shows. You know how I feel about K generally. I would not bring my young son and sit courtside while he's there because I find his language so despicable. But regardless, this wasn't that bad. Grow some. Come on, kid from Duke newspaper. You know what he didn't complain about was the other people.
If you look, if you listen to the interview, you find out there on Twitter and the like. I mean, he was asked about the upcoming game, and he didn't want to answer the question. And he made an analogy for the kid of, you know, what course is your toughest course? He said economics. He said, do you want to, if you have an awful, really tough economics exam, do you want to talk about what's going to happen in your next course? No, you don't want to do that. And that's all he really said. It wasn't awful. It wasn't condescending. And Kay apologized anyhow today.
Kay apologized because of the pressure. But the whole thing was just blown out of ridiculous proportion.
I agree with you.
And I feel like everybody's gotten too sensitive in this country. Get over yourselves.
Tytel, final thoughts.
You're the winningest coach in the history of the sport. You should be able to answer a question from a student. Moving on. I was going to talk about something else, but we have some, if not breaking news, at least today news. Virginia Tech guard Tyrese Radford was suspended indefinitely after being arrested for a DUI and a concealed weapon. He's second on the team in scoring. He's second on the team in rebounding. And now he's really putting his team in a bad spot. And I think they're going to keep dropping down the seed list as they go. It might be a quick suspension. It's indefinite right now. But the last thing that anybody needs this time of year is a starting player who you can depend on getting suspended.
What the heck these kids are thinking sometimes. I mean, they're not thinking, honestly.
If it's indefinitely play for Duke, he'd be suspended for the Pitt game. That's it.
I
gave my K shot. That's a real.
It'd be a 2-day suspension. The next game was 3 days away.
Did he trip a guy also? Yeah. Just.
Until that happened, he and I were having a pretty good night.
David, any other final thoughts for real?
I don't know. Like, it's just, I guess St. Louis. I'm real curious to see what they can do. I know we close with them, but. You know, the idea that they are a tournament caliber team, or at least we think they are, and that there's teams in the conference that have played 8 more games than they have. Are they going to be able to get all their games in? And what is the plan the rest of the way? I don't know. Like, because it's going to be kind of a sprint just to get enough games in for them to really be fairly and accurately evaluated.
Yeah, I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch now that they're back on the court, allegedly.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't have another shutdown. But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back Wednesday night with Under the Radar, Thursday night with a bracket rundown. But on behalf of David Griggs, Joby Fortson, John Tytel, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.